Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we have been excited to bring on Rob Staton of Seahawks Draft Blog on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Rob, how you doing?
Fantastic, Jake. You know, this is the worst time of the year because there's no football for ages, but I'm getting through it and bring on the fall. Let's go.
We feel the same exact way, and especially when the Mariners are not performing to expectation, we are yearning for NFL and for the Seahawks to get here as soon as possible. Now, Rob, there's some interesting conversation that has happened over the last couple days, really sparked by Lewis Riddick of ESPN, talking about Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo. And I wanted to bring you on and get your thoughts about this, because there's a couple aspects of this that catch my attention. One is the obvious, which is the quarterback position. And I want you to listen to this, okay? Listen to this. Cut number two, Lewis Riddick. Here's what he had to say this morning on the Mike Salk Show about Jimmy G and why he thinks it would work here.
They've got a lot of things going for them, man. And Shane Waldron, their offensive coordinator, comes from the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan tree.
Right.
That's exactly, obviously, where Jimmy Garoppolo's coming from. And if you look at Jimmy's statistics last year, look, Jimmy's a guy who people really get on him because of the fact that he doesn't stay healthy. He's had some durability and availability issues, obviously. He's a guy who's one pass away from beating Kansas City in the Super Bowl, and he's a dropped interception by Jaquiski Tartt last year going back to the Super Bowl.
So, Rob, you hear that. What's your take?
Okay, well, look, it's true that Jimmy Garoppolo is that close to winning a Super Bowl and that close to getting back to the Super Bowl, but it wasn't just Jimmy Garoppolo against those two teams. You know, he had Debo Samuel, he had Kyle Shanahan, he had George Kittle, he had a defense with Nick Bosa. So let's just get the record straight there. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo, the 49ers traded two first-round picks and used their original pick to try and replace Jimmy Garoppolo. So let's just have a little perspective there with that. Look, I think that the Seahawks had a really fantastic draft and did the right thing in terms of building through the trenches and putting some pieces together that can help them move forward. But to say that they're, you know, close, or that bringing somebody like Jimmy G in is going to help them to contend this year, just isn't true. They've got two rookie offensive tackles that are going to have to learn the ropes this year. They've got a very young pass rush that is going to need to develop. They've got no real proven quality there. They've got cornerbacks. Yeah, they've got a decent group of young cornerbacks. They hope that two starters can emerge from that, but there's no sure thing with that. They've got some weapons, but they also have to work out this offense now, minus Russell Wilson, and they've got to work out a defensive system that's going to work, having made changes to the coaching staff there. This is a team that is in development, that needs to develop the young players on this roster, that needs to figure out its identity again, that needs to work out what it wants to do defensively and offensively. And look, bringing in a quarterback like Jimmy Garoppolo, or Baker Mayfield for that matter, is not going to put the team into contention. I hope that they stay the course. They don't get drawn into thinking that they're a quarterback away. The situation is what the situation is. This is a year to blood young players, develop them, and set the table for the future.
Rob, Curtis Rogers here filling in for Stacy today. Another thing going on with the Seahawks right now is DK Metcalf's contract situation, him skipping minicamp, taking that unexcused absence. Jake and I, we were talking about this before you came on, just the Seahawks' philosophy of paying veteran players late into the summer. Do you think that philosophy can backfire on them a lot, or do you think that is still the right course they should go with a lot of these veterans who are seeking new deals?
Curtis, I don't really understand this plan. You know, I hope that someone one day will ask them to sort of just give us their view, because I'm sure that there are merits to sort of waiting until after the draft. And it may even just be that you want to focus on free agency, then you want to focus on the draft, and then once that business is out of the way, you can focus on this. But it hasn't done them well in the past. You know, you think of the Frank Clark situation, and they waited and waited for that. Then we see Danielle Hunter sign what ended up being a very favorable deal in the summer at $14.4 million. They decided they didn't want to pay Frank Clark that. They leave it to the year. They end up franchise tagging him at $17 million. That's already more expensive. Then Lawrence in Dallas signs a deal worth $21 million a year. They don't want to pay that to Frank Clark. And having waited, all of a sudden, they face the prospect of having to trade him. I really hope they don't get to the same situation with DK Metcalf. And I fear a little bit that if they go into training camp without a deal, that maybe it then goes into the season without a deal because no player's going to hold out under the new CBA. And then if the idea is that you franchise tag DK Metcalf in a year, that the same situation may play out again. We've already seen Godwin, Williams, Moore, Brown, Adams, Cup, Hill sign mega contracts. In the future, we may see Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel. Next year, maybe Justin Jefferson signing a new deal. Oh. The price for receivers is just going to go up and up and up, and it's going to get harder and harder to pay DK Metcalf. This should have been sorted by now. It really needs to get sorted before training camp. If I had to predict, I think it probably will. But until it happens, we've got to stress this needs to get done as soon as possible. It's only going to get more expensive from here.
Yeah, Rob, I get shivers when you just talk about that, because it's like the absolute worst case scenario when you're talking about, you know, a situation like this for DK. And, you know, Rob, the crazy thing is that the team has operated in different ways before. We have seen it, right? It hasn't always been that particular time of the year. We've seen them get, you know, Tyler Lockett, for example. You know, we all thought that deal at the time, it looked expensive. And then hindsight, you go back and go, oh, wow, that was actually a really good job by this franchise to get ahead of the market. And I'm just, you know, I wish that they would do that and take more of that approach. And I know you do, too. But coming back to this quarterback conversation, Rob, you know, Jimmy G, Baker Mayfield, if these two guys were to get cut, and we're obviously living in an alternate reality here because I don't think it's going to play out and the Seahawks are going to have their pick here of what quarterback they could choose. But who would you take? Would you take Baker Mayfield or would you take Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, Garoppolo's good on third downs. That's something that the Seahawks, I would imagine, would be interested in. He's got less baggage than Baker. It'd kind of be a reverse Richard Sherman going from San Francisco to Seattle. And I think that'd be interesting to see how that'd play out. And he would produce a floor that allows the Seahawks to be more average and consistent in 2022 rather than being maybe a mystery, maybe a little bit more inconsistent with the quarterbacks that they've got. But he's prone to injuries. He'd be expensive. You know, I wouldn't be totally like against that move if they sign him, but I'm going to pine for that to happen. And with Baker, look, he's had everything in Cleveland. He's had receivers. They've traded for big name receivers. They've signed big name receivers. They've drafted tight ends. They've signed tight ends. He's had a great running game. He's had a good O-line. He's had three offensive-minded head coaches, and he has a career passer rating of 87.8. He's thrown 56 interceptions. He has got physical limitations. It has gone badly wrong for him at the end in Cleveland, although I think that franchise takes a lot of responsibility for that. Personally, just don't really get the appeal other than the fact he's a big name and people like the commercials. I think that a lot of people think he's better than he is. I think he's basically what Drew Lock could have been if he'd been given 4 years as a starter with a great supporting cast and someone other than Vic Fangio as coach. So, you know, kind of, you know, it's kind of like asking me, do I want to kick up the backside or a punch in the face, whether I want Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo? The answer is kind of neither. I kind of want to see them just sort of hold the fort, you know, just go with what you have got. And let's all reconvene in a year's time, or less than a year's time now. It's more like, you know, 9 months, and say, who do you want? Will Levis or Tyler Van Dyke or Bryce Young or CJ Stroud? You know, let's go and get one of those guys instead.
So Rob, if I'm hearing you correctly, you are one of the few guys that are out there, and I've seen this on the text line, is saying, I don't care. I don't want any of them. Figure out the Drew Lock, Geno Smith experience and ride that out for the year. And we are going to see where we, you know, hopefully at the end of the year, that you're seeing development, but that you have a secure top 10 pick. Is that basically the gist of what I'm getting from you here?
I would never say I want the Seahawks to lose, because I don't want the Seahawks to lose.
Yeah.
But I think a bit of short-term pain can lead to some long-term gain. And I'm not somebody who has just sort of read something on the internet that says it's a good quarterback class. I have pretty much watched every single game that Will Levis and Tyler Van Dyke and Bryce Young and CJ Stroud played last year. I've got a better idea of the quarterback class than maybe a lot of people have, because I've got no social life and I spend a lot of time watching these quarterbacks play. So I know that there is a decent group, and there's always a chance that other players will be added to that. I think one of those players could lead this franchise for the long term. And if I have to struggle through this year with a less than appealing quarterback situation and just sort of take our lumps this year and see it through for the long term, count me in for that. And if it means a top 10 pick, or if it means that you pick in the top 12, let's say, and you have to move up a few spots, that is fine by me. The key to this team succeeding for the long term is getting a long-term answer at quarterback. So for 2022, I'm not really concerned about the record. I'm looking forward to going to Munich. I don't care if the Seahawks get hammered by Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm going to have a great time in that game in Germany. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to try and enjoy the moments I can from this 2022 season. And you know what, Jake? If the Seahawks don't bring a lot of joy, watching the college football games and watching those quarterbacks will hopefully make up for it.
Well, yeah, then we can just start fantasizing about who's going to be the Seahawks signal caller heading into the 2023 season. Rob, a couple of, or well, at least one outlet that is not very bullish on the Seahawks' hopes this year, they think they're going to take their lumps as Pro Football Focus. I believe a couple weeks ago they had them ranked 32nd in their power rankings. And then yesterday they had their offensive line ranked 32nd in the NFL. What do you make of those two rankings having the Seahawks that low?
It's funny, isn't it? You know, listen, a Pete Carroll-led team is not going to end up being the 32nd team in the league. I don't think the Seahawks are going to end up picking first overall. I don't think that's going to happen at all. You know, there are too many bad teams in this league who'll be more than willing to take that mantle. badly run at the top and badly coached. So there's no way that's going to happen. In terms of the offensive line, look, when you've got two very young starting offensive tackles, you don't quite know what you're going to get from that. And I'm looking forward to watching Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas, assuming that they start. And I'm intrigued to see what they can do. But the truth is it could be difficult for them, especially when you play in this division, the NFC West, which has got a lot of good pass rushers, and they're going to come up against good pass rushers outside of the division as well. So it could be a real challenge for them, especially because the team might not be able to keep teams honest with the quarterback situation as it is. Maybe if they can run the ball very, very well, it can take a lot of pressure off the two tackles. But again, look, I think Cross and Lucas have got too much talent to think that this is going to be the worst defensive line in the league. You know, Blythe knows the offense. He knows the calls that he's going to have to make there. I think Damian Lewis, he might have had a down year last year. I wish they'd move him back to right guard where he had his success. They're still playing him at left guard. But, you know, he's got some talent there. And let's see how the rest of this line shapes up. But I don't think it's going to be the worst in the league. I don't think the team's going to be the worst in the league.
Yeah, Rob, this is the last question for us here. But in cut number 6, I want you to listen to this. Lewis Riddick talks about, again, very bullish about the Seahawks. And one thing that he says in particular that really catches your attention. Let's listen to that cut. Cut 6.
An up-and-coming defense now being led by a new defensive coordinator that has drafted some studs. Look, I just mentioned Boye Mafe. Kobe Bryant is going to be a stud. He's going to be in a stud. And, of course, I've heard some real good things. And I'll tell you what, Tariq Woolen, oh, boy. They may have struck absolute platinum with this guy. Platinum. Former wide receiver. You know the story.
Oh, yeah.
This physical skills out the wazoo. Seattle, I think, is a sleeping giant that needs to develop these other young players and get that quarterback position straight.
Okay. So all the other fluff, just the last part of what he was saying there, a sleeping giant. Now, I hear that, and I think Lewis Riddick is more talking about the future of this team, that they've set themselves on the right track. Some people have said, oh, he's talking about this year in 2022. How do you view this team? Because I view this team as a group that's a work in progress, got off to the right start, and it's going to be really fun to watch how they develop and put this thing together. Do you feel differently?
No, completely agree with that, Jake. My eyebrows raised at the idea of them being a sleeping giant. I think it's a little bit too early to kind of go with that. They've got a lot of promise, haven't they? You know, the players that he's talked about in the secondary there, we hope that they can emerge and develop. And certainly with the pass rushers as well. You know, people like Boye Mafe. Can he come and add to what Daryl Taylor's shown there? And Wosu, who they've brought in and really build a group here. But there are too many unknowns right now to sort of put a label like sleeping giant on the Seahawks. They've had a really good draft. You know, I thought it was an A-plus draft that the Seahawks have just had. I think they've done the right thing in building the right areas of the team. I like the fact that they avoided the quarterback class, and I think they've put themselves, you know, in a great position to drive this forward. But, you know, to talk about them succeeding and needing a quarterback to get, you know, they need another offseason. They need a free agency period where they've got some cap space to spend. They need another draft where they've got a whole bunch of picks coming up. And maybe in 12 months' time, we can talk about sleeping Giants, but there's still a lot of things that need to work out. I'm intrigued. I'm excited, Jake, to see what it's going to look like this year. But I also think we have to be realistic about where this team is.
I completely agree. And that is Rob Staton of Seahawks Draft Blog. He's got amazing work, analysis of the draft that you're not going to want to miss. As Rob said, studying these quarterbacks like crazy in every other position. It's not because, like Rob said, that he has no social life. It's because this guy's really, really good at what he does. I trust his eye. I love his work. And I know you guys will, too. So go check that out if you have the time. Keep up with everything Seahawks. He is on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Rob, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure.
All right. Rob, always love his takes. All right. Don't forget, if you haven't heard, the Seattle chapter of WISE, that's Women in Sports and Events, wants to recognize a woman in our community through this new program called the Women of Inspiration Award. Do you know a woman that gives her all to the sports and events community? It's time to celebrate her. Learn more at womenofinspiration.org. All right, let's get to headline rewrites brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right, the Warriors are a win away from their fourth title after winning a pivotal Game 5 over the Celtics. What's the real headline?
Real headline, you know things are going Golden State's way when Steph Curry is held without a three, and they still win by double digits.
You're not kidding. I mean, Steph Curry doesn't score a three-pointer in the game?
I had to look it up the last time Steph played in a game and didn't record a three-pointer. It was in, I believe, November 8th, 2018, against the Milwaukee Bucks.
Jeez. it doesn't even make sense.
Almost 4 years ago, the last time Steph didn't hit a three in a game.
A three-pointer is like a layup to Steph Curry.
Yes.
How does that not happen? And if you were to see that, you would say automatic loss for Golden State. However, this does speak to the overall talent and roster and depth that the Golden State Warriors have. And look, if it's not Steph Curry or Klay Thompson, then you're looking at Andrew Wiggins. And Andrew Wiggins, you know, stepped up in this game and really was able to fill up the stat sheet, rock chalk. And look, this is an opportunity that I believe that the Golden State Warriors, they take advantage of this game. Boston Celtics have a disappointing finish to the end of the game. I just don't see the Celtics really coming back from this. I honestly would be very, very surprised if the Celtics tie this thing up.
I think the Warriors being able to reload after those couple of years sort of wandering after Kevin Durant's departure has been very impressive, because they've not only had this veteran core together for a long time with Curry, Klay, Draymond Green. They added Andrew Wiggins to that a couple of years ago. But they've also been able to stockpile a lot of high lottery picks over the last few years. James Wiseman, the number two pick in last year's NBA draft, has missed the entire season with a meniscus tear. So there's a possibility he comes back next year. You've got Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody, two guys who were lottery picks this year. I mean, they've been able to round out their roster and just been able to build something that will sustain beyond just this one season. They're so good. And also, the luxury tax that the Warriors owners are paying right now is absurd. Because they're repeat offenders, they are paying $340 million this season in luxury tax.
Wow.
To keep this roster together. But you know what? That's an ownership group that is committing to spending money, and they're saying, you know what? It is worth it for us to spend this because we're going to make it back in jersey sales and
tickets. Wait, what are you talking about? I thought that they barely make any money. Like, I thought being an owner of a sports franchise, like, you're scraping by.
That's right. It's not as lucrative as it would appear.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the red, I would imagine, right? Paying all that money? Brady, they have to be in the red. You look that up?
They're making absurd amounts of money.
Oh, so you're saying spending money to make money actually works?
Interesting concept.
Oh, wow. That would be fantastic.
Big if true.
To be able to see that around.
Headline rewrites.
All right. Rams COO Kevin DeMoff says the team remains optimistic that they can re-sign Odell Beckham Jr. What's the real headline?
Real headline, how many roster spots are the Rams working with? Because it feels like they've got a lot more spots than any other team.
Well, it feels
How can
like,
you sign all these guys?
Well, not only sign these guys, keep them under the cap, and be able to manage all those star players, right? That's what it feels like. I mean, they're working with the same roster spots as everyone else. But to your point, Curtis, there are a ton of superstars that the Rams currently have on their roster. And, you know, there's two things that stand out. Number one, when you have a good thing going, everyone wants to be a part of it. You saw that in Seattle during their heyday, and you're able to get guys to be able to come in here on cheaper deals because they want to be a part of a winning organization. So that's number one. Number two is that when you have a great culture, even amongst star players, that you can win. It doesn't mean because you have star players that, like, when you don't care about the credit game, great things can happen. And that, to me, is one of the greatest frustrations that I have in the Legion of Boom era, is that everyone was so obsessed with the credit pie that that's what, to me, that's what blew this whole thing up. Not the amount of money anybody was getting paid or things of that nature. It was the fracturing relationships that happened internally that they could not get over 2014 in the way that season ended. And the drama that ensued and the bitterness that ensued and the credit game that everybody sought after, what I think the Rams have done a fantastic job of is no one cares about the credit pie. Really, everybody, look, Aaron Donald is the king of the credit pie.
Everybody knows and then, that it's Aaron Donald.
Right, and everybody else just kind of follows suit. And that's amazing. That's great. Right? You don't have Cooper Kupp that's sitting there saying, hey, it's all about me. It's me, 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 me. You have Cooper Kupp who's literally willing to do anything it takes. And yeah, he's getting paid handsomely to do it, but he's earned that. And I think that OBJ, you thought that this guy was going to be a cancer. He joins any team. No, he goes to the right culture. He goes to the right fit. And in having all these superstars, you were able to make it work. And that's what's been so impressive to me about what Sean McVay has been able to do, Les Snead has been able to do with the Rams. And I hate that it's happening within your own division as a Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
But you do have to appreciate what they've been able to do and the fact that they've been able to keep all of these personalities together and make it all work.
Rams, they just have it all.
I'm sorry.
They get the team that has it all.
They do. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. We got NFL headlines coming up next. I told you that there was Hall of Fame beef. We will tell you who is attacking who next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, you're listening to Jake and Stacey. Stacey is out. She's been on vacation. Needs that time of rest. So, look, I will be filling in for Stacey in the meantime, and she'll be back tomorrow. Curtis Rogers joining me. And we've got Brady behind the glass and running the board and helping produce the show. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. All right, I told you that there was some Hall of Fame on Hall of Fame bad blood going on.
My favorite kind of beef. Hall of Fame on Hall of Fame.
I got to tell you, this is weird. This is really, really weird, Curtis. I don't know how you feel about this, but Bills legend and Hall of Famer Bruce Smith, who's one of my all-time favorite players, by the way. Loved me some
Probably
Bruce Smith.
Probably a top five pass rusher of all time.
Is not a fan of Tony Boselli. His election to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Quote, a large part of the campaign to promote Tony Boselli into the Hall of Fame seems to be hyper-focused on a single successful performance he had against me in the 1996 playoff game, Smith said in a statement posted on his official Instagram account. On the one hand, I'm quite flattered to be considered the gold standard by which another player's game can be measured to determine his qualification into the Hall of Fame. But on a more serious level, I and other Hall of Famers believe it sets a horrible precedent to negatively zero in on a standing member of the Hall's play in order to validate a candidacy of a nominee. What in the world?
Boselli's election to the Hall of Fame doesn't take away yours, Bruce. Like, you're still in the Hall of Fame regardless of who else gets in there. It's not like Boselli gets in and they were like, oh, got to give us the gold jacket back. We only have room for so many guys.
This is so
Boselli
weird.
Boselli had an abbreviated career due to injury, but when he played, he was super productive.
Right.
5-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, part of the All-1990s team in the NFL. Only played 6 full seasons with the Jags in his career, but he was a Pro Bowler in 5 of those.
And I mean, look, why is Bruce Smith in his feelings about this? Like, sorry that they point to that game, but that's a pivotal game for the Jags and their franchise history. And yeah, you're one of the best to ever do it, and it just goes to speak to how good Tony Boselli actually was in the league. It's not just one game that got him into the Hall of Fame. That's just one example that they use. And yeah, it's a tip of the cap to you because it's his best example.
Yeah, it's like this guy dominated a legend in a playoff game. That kind of speaks to how good of a pass protector he was. Also, in his criticisms of Boselli, Bruce Smith uses the defense of, well, Boselli had a left-handed quarterback for most of his Jacksonville career, Mark Brunell. So as a left tackle, he wasn't really protecting Brunell's blind side. But if you're going to use that for Boselli, then how about any right tackle that's in the Hall of Fame that played with a majority right-handed quarterback? Like, you can't pick and choose here, Bruce. Like,
right.
Just grin and bear it when Boselli has to make his speech this summer at the Hall of Fame. Like, I don't see why there isn't room for everybody. In fact, I have never liked the fact that a lot of Halls of Fame seem very exclusionary towards really good players or players that had tremendously high peaks. It's supposed to tell the story of that sport. It's supposed to tell the story of football.
Yes.
And you can't tell it without the greatest of the greats in the Hall of Fame. So get guys like Boselli in there. Get guys like Devin Hester in there, who were he was the best kick returner of all time.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. Yeah, he only played in one phase of the game mostly, but like he was still the best ever to do what he did. I think the Pro Football Hall of Fame could stand to loosen up a little bit, especially guys like Bruce Smith, who's getting in his feelings here.
Well, look, your feelings of a rival player or one example that you watched and saw, I mean, it's just utterly ridiculous, and it makes me not like Bruce Smith. And I love Bruce Smith. What are you doing, Bruce? Just stop. Just stop with the madness. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right, moving on.
No!
Carissa Thompson will reportedly be named studio host for Amazon's Thursday Night Football. I think this is an awesome.
She's a great studio
addition.
Host.
Now, isn't Kay Adams also going to be on the Thursday night like studio?
We thought that was going to be the case. I don't think that's so anymore, and I think Carissa Thompson is going to take the role that was supposed to be for Kay Adams.
Really?
I don't know what happened there. Hmm. But look, Carissa Thompson's really good on Fox Sports. She's local, too. I forget which high school she went to. The Mac and Jack's text line, they'll figure it out for me. I won't have to look up on Google at all, but she always does her Lee Johnson Chevrolet ads. Those are famous around here. always like seeing local talent blossom in the way that she has, and I think Amazon is doing it for the better here by hiring her. You look at the crop of talent that they have hired for Thursday Night Football. Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Carissa Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
They're like courting Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think. Isn't Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch, aren't they sort of in talks too?
Yeah.
It feels like they're just like, okay, let's just get every name possible. Let's get everybody with a name that has some recognition. Let's get them on this broadcast. It doesn't matter if they have any chemistry or whatnot. Let's just get the biggest names possible.
Yes, and honestly, I'm a little bummed about this because I'm bummed about Carissa Thompson. I'm super stoked for her and excited for her, and she'll do an amazing job. But I was hoping that Kay Adams and Carissa Thompson would be joining the group and just making it stronger. You know, what Carissa Thompson does for Fox right now is great, and was hoping to see maybe she would play somewhat of a similar role, Curtis. Maybe just elevated pay, and Kay Adams is the host. But seems like Kay Adams and Thursday and Amazon could not come to an agreement.
She's an Inglemore Viking.
Inglemore Viking. Well,
out in Kenmore.
I mean, look, I'm not going to say anything to get myself in trouble, but you know, Inglemore right now, football program, they've got to turn themselves around. Okay, it's been a long time coming.
Wow.
Look, I really like what Thursday Night Football is doing. We'll see how it all comes together, the product. But having Al Michaels, you know, calling the game, I mean, it just brings serious legitimacy to that game. It will make it even better. All right. CBS Sports' Jonathan Jones reports that the Panthers and Browns have resumed discussions regarding a trade for Baker Mayfield. So anybody out there, now, we have not heard more about this other than this one report, but if that is indeed true, then the Seahawks would be all aboard the Jimmy G train and not really have a choice about it. But this speaks to the Panthers where they said, look, we are comfortable with where we're at right now with Matt Corral and Sam Darnold. Does that make you feel like they maybe got into OTAs, a mandatory minicamp, like, and told themselves, maybe this isn't working out like we were hoping it would?
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe a little bit of buyer's remorse running it back with Sam Darnold in year two. Sam was not particularly exciting in his first year in Carolina, and I think the book is out on what his ceiling can be as a quarterback mm-hmm. in the NFL. Matt Corral, I mean, look, he's a rookie, a third-round pick rookie. There's a lot of gamble to be made on starting a quarterback in the third round, especially when as raw as Matt Corral has been in his career, coming off an injury, too, that he suffered at the end of Ole Miss's season. So, yeah, I can see why Carolina would be interested. And, look, if Carolina does make a move for Baker Mayfield, it makes the decision for the Seahawks a lot easier on who is their starting quarterback heading into week one of the regular season.
It's Jake and Stacy. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, we got Hype Train. Are you getting on the train or are you staying at the station? We've got a whole bunch of topics, fun topics. That is coming up next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. I'm Jake Heaps, filling in for Stacy Ross, who has been out the last couple days on vacation. Well deserved, and she'll be back tomorrow. Got Curtis Rogers next to me, Brady behind the glass. We are going to the station. Get on the hype train. Let's go. All right, this is the hype train. We are going to tell you the latest hype train, what is going on, all the talk, and we are going to ask you if you are boarding or staying at the station, letting that train go right on by.
Having your Cinnabon.
All right, so, Curtis, first hype train. Are you boarding or are you staying at the station? The Mariners make a change at the leadoff spot prior to tonight's game. You boarding that train?
I am hopping aboard this train. Sound the horn. I think they're forced to make a change atop the lineup. Jesse Winker is not it at the, out of the leadoff spot. I think you'll see J.P. Crawford batting leadoff tonight. I don't have any inside info on this, but I think you have to change something with Jesse Winker, whether it be moving him down in the order or getting him out of the lineup entirely. I am of the ilk that you got to get him out of the lineup right now. Sit him down for a couple of days. Let him clear his head. Let him fix whatever's bothering him, because right now, putting him in that lineup day in and day out atop the lineup is ruining things. It's ruining him. It's ruining this team's chances of winning ball games. It is not it. It ain't it.
It ain't it.
Fix it.
All right.
Fix this.
Brady, get on the train.
Oh, I'm on it already. It's already out of the station. I already left with it because they need to make this change. If they want to give someone who's actually going to set up and get on base more at-bats at the top of the lineup, you have to get Jesse Winker out. I'm fine with him staying in the lineup. Just put him down 5 spots, 6 spots. Let him get a couple different looks from another different pitchers. Maybe they're not going to figure him out as much. They've been really pounding him inside with a lot of off-speed pitches and changeups away. Maybe you get down in that lineup, you get a nice little 0-0 fastball cookie over the middle of the plate, and you can take it deep.
Maybe. I mean, right now he's struggling to hit those fastballs. What I would say, the Mariners make a change at the leadoff spot prior to tonight's game, meaning Jesse Winker. I am not boarding this hype train, gentlemen. Now, it is not because I disagree. You know that we have been pounding and banging this drum for a little while now in regards to needing to make this change, but for whatever reason, it feels like they are doing everything that they can to try and make Fetch happen. And they are trying to make Jesse Winker happen in the leadoff spot, and I believe they will do it again. And I'm sorry to say that to Curtis and Brady, but I just have a feeling that they're going to roll that out, that same lineup, again. All right, next hype train. The Warriors will close out the NBA Finals with a win in Game 6. Curtis, are you boarding or are you letting it go on by?
I mean, we all want a Game 7. That's what you want
Big
in a
basketball
series.
Wants a yeah. Game 7.
Those who control such things want a Game 7. Those with the money control whether we get a Game 7 or not. But I don't think we're getting a Game 7. I think the Warriors close it out in Game 6. And I think Steph Curry hits a three. He hits at least one three in Game 6.
Okay.
That's my bold take.
Bold take.
If Stacey's listening, I'll bet you that Steph Curry hits a three in Game 6. I think he ends up being Finals MVP. The Warriors get their fourth title of the Curry, Steve Kerr, Clay, Draymond era. And I think it legitimizes their first title even more because after they won that, everyone's like, why do you need Kevin Durant? Well, look, I think it makes that an even more impressive win that they were able to win a title without Kevin Durant. Win two titles, really, without him if they do pull it off in Game 6.
All right, Brady, the Warriors will close out the NBA Finals with a win in Game 6. You boarding this train or letting it go on by?
Oh, I'm getting on board this one right here.
All right.
For two reasons. One, I just think now that they got the 3-2 lead, their mindset is do not let it get to a Game 7. Because if you get to Game 7, then who knows what's going to happen. Two, for my mom's sanity, big Golden State Warriors fan, and I do not want to see her stressing out during a Game 7, just sitting there, no, come on, Steph.
I am with you. I am boarding this train as well. I think the Warriors close this out. But if you're a conspiracy theorist, big basketball always finds a way to step in and make
the
Game
man.
7. Yeah, so you got to watch out for big basketball, but I do think the Warriors can overcome it. All right, here we go. Next hype train. The Mariners will send more than one player to this year's All-Star Game. Not one, but maybe two?
Maybe two.
Boarding this train or letting it go on by,
Curtis? The lock in my mind is Ty France. He is the best first baseman in the American League statistically by almost every measure, except for home runs. But he is still wiping the floor in terms of production amongst American League first basemen. He is my lock on this Mariners team. And I think they get one more in Logan Gilbert. I am hopping aboard this train. I think they get at least two.
Okay.
A third, right. maybe not. But I think France and Logan Gilbert will see him in L.A. in mid-July.
Okay. All right, Brady?
I will also be jumping on this hype train because I do believe in France, as Curtis said, guaranteed lock. If he's not there, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Second one, Logan Gilbert, of course, definitely got to make it, especially with he's on the mound tonight. If he has a solid performance tonight, there is no question in my mind that he's going to make it there, and I want to see the kid. I want to see Julio. I want to see him. I know there's a lot maybe riding against him, rookie. They're not going to give him the bid. He's putting out.
He is.
He's given all you. He struggled just a little bit in the last couple weeks, but that man is producing.
Yes, he is. All right, I'm boarding this hype train as well because I do believe it'll be either JP or Julio. One of those two guys have a great chance, and I think they do have good followings. All right, very quickly, very, very quickly.
The most important one.
A new hype train. Very quickly. A lunch pizza buffet is the best kind of buffet. You guys got to answer this quickly.
Oh,
I know it's tough. Boarding this train or not? There's a lot of good buffets out there.
Yes, and I love pizza. Pizza is probably my number one comfort food.
Curtis, we're up against the clock.
The only one that comes close is a Mongolian Grill buffet, where you can just get bowl after bowl after bowl. They chop it up in front of you. I'll get on this train. Okay. I'll go 4 for 4 today.
My man.
I'll take a lunch pizza buffet.
Four in every train.
Yeah.
All right, Brady. Lunch pizza buffet is the best kind of buffet.
I'm with it.
Heck yeah.
Because you know me, I'm so fat.
There's breakfast buffet. There's a seafood buffet. There's all kinds of buffets. But lunch pizza buffet is the best kind of buffet of all time. Boarding this train. Not even a question.
So many horns
University
in this segment.
University Place, round table, lunch pizza buffet. Hands down, the best. The absolute best. It is an event at the Heaps household. All right. We have got now, this is the end of the Jake and Stacey show, but don't worry, we are sticking around for another hour. We've got the Dugout coming your way next, all hour long, and we're kicking it off with the Scott Service Show. That's coming your way next.